What up, son? It's the tale of the tapes. The fuck life. Saying?
All right, Tale of the Tapes, Season 3, Episode 16. On today's episode, we'll be covering Fabulous and Immortal Technique. So the weather is absolutely glorious. I'm not shutting the windows. I apologize if there's any background noise, but that'll be part of the Formsy experience. Alright, so I definitely got a lot to say on both of these guys today, specifically Fabulous, because he's been one of my favorite rappers since he was in the Triangle Offense with Paul Kane and Joe Budden, and all the DJ Clue mixtapes and stuff like that. I gotta give a major shout out to my man Dirty T for always staying on top of the Triangle Offense with me and cooling out listening to Monday Night Mixtape every Monday like clockwork. And you know what? Speaking of Dirty T, that actually perfectly leads me right into my opinions and predictions on Fab. So, Fab and Jada have always been two of his personal favorites, but he tends to lean more towards Jada, whereas I lean more towards Fab. Now, when I started this study, I made a prediction that Fabulous would beat Jadakiss by at least 25 spots. Really, probably the main reason that I made that prediction is because it's something that me and him are always bickering about. I'm not 100% sure that I would have gone out of my way to specifically make a prediction about those two going against each other had this not been the case. I guess maybe it could because they're both nice and they did have an album together and stuff like that. But I'm sure that them being two of his favorites and me and him, you know, constantly discussing music since the day we started hanging out and shit like that probably had at least something to do with me making that prediction. Now, being that Jadakiss is currently sitting in 17th place, this puts me in a bit of a tough spot. But that being said, we are a little past the halfway point in this study. So, you know, if averages wind up being accurate, that should leave Jada somewhere around 30th overall when this is all said and done. Which means that Fab would have to finish in the top 5 at the end of this entire thing for me to win that bet. Now, I want to be clear. Before this started, I wasn't expecting Jada to finish quite that high. So I can't say that when I made that prediction that I thought Fab would be top 5. But after starting Fab, not only did I think he'd be top 5, but I made an even bolder prediction that he would finish ahead of Jay-Z, who's currently sitting in 3rd place overall. So, besides the fact that Fabulous is one of my favorite rappers of all time, and his second album, Street Dreams, is in my top 25 hip-hop albums of all time, these predictions alone should make for a hell of a suspenseful episode, to say the least. And as far as Immortal Technique is concerned, that Fabulous prediction is certainly a hard act to follow, so I can't say that I have quite as much to offer with Immortal Technique, but I at least do have something to say. A couple of people, including my cousin Chucky, who's been on the show more than once, have brought him up to me before and showed me songs and stuff like that. And I could see the appeal, and I didn't think that the dude was bad. I just never really pursued listening to more of him. And that's not to say that I hated the songs that I was shown, but I just didn't really like them enough to really dive in. And that's just personal preference. That's not based on, you know, any technicalities or anything like that. So, fast forward to now, heading into Immortal Technique, to be quite honest with you, I expected an overly complicated dude who I didn't really enjoy much. And to be honest with you, those are some of the worst people to cover in this study, in my opinion, because you have to pay very, very close attention to literally every word that they say, but at the same time, you're not really enjoying the music that you're paying that close attention to, so it's kind of like a double whammy. Some people are just whatever, and you know, you could tell halfway through their catalog that they're really never going to say anything too good or too bad. You kind of just let the music rock, and they stay even keel for the most part. You know, then there's other people who, they're not great, but I love their music, and they're always a pleasure to listen to. But the people who force you to really listen extremely intently while not really enjoying what you're listening to are, they're a little tough to get through. Again, this is not to say that they're bad or that I hated Immortal Technique. I just didn't necessarily expect to enjoy going through his entire catalog. As far as where I thought he'd finish, I guess I'd say back middle. So we're through 234 artists right now, so maybe somewhere between 115 and 125 or so. But both of these artists covered here today had their debut albums out in 2001, but Fabolous was out first in September, so we're going to start off here with him today. His birth name is John David Jackson, also known as Fabolous Sport and Loso, born November 18, 1977 in New York City, United States. Genres are listed as hip-hop and East Coast hip-hop, and his years active are listed as 1997 to present. So right off the bat, I want to comment on Fab's government name here. So for those of you who are not aware of this, John David Jackson was a professional boxer and also a trainer who trained Sergey Kovalev, specifically for his fight against Andre Ward, which was the biggest fight of his career. So that's pretty wild that this is called Tale of the Tapes, which is based off of a boxing term. And Fab's name is exactly the same name as a professional boxer and trainer. So, wild coincidence number 1,000 here today. And we also see that it said he was born November 18th in New York City, which is only 3 days away from my birthday. And although it is true that he was born in NYC, I just wanted to be really clear because there's no place of origin listed here, but for anyone who happens to be unaware, Fabolous is most definitely from Brooklyn in the New York City area, to be specific. So, I just wanted to be clear about that. Other than that, I don't really think there's much else there to discuss, so let's check out some additional background information on Fab for now. John David Jackson, born November 18th, 1977, better known by his stage name Fabolous, is an American rapper, singer, and songwriter. Raised in Brooklyn in the early years of his career, he rapped under the name Fabolous Sport in reference to Ralph Lauren's Polo Sport line. However, this was later shortened to simply Fabolous. The misspelling was unintentional. Jackson originally intended to be simply called Fabulous, but incorrectly spelled it during a freestyle, and it stuck. He first gained recognition while still a senior in high school when he performed live on American music executive DJ Clue's radio show, then on Hot 97. Jackson subsequently signed to DJ Clue's Desert Storm imprint and later secured a distribution deal with major label Elektra. Jackson gained prominence with his first release, Ghetto Fabolous, in 2001, which spawned the hit singles Can't Deny It featuring Nate Dogg and Young and Holla Back. His second release was 2003's Street Dreams, which was supported by two U.S. top 10 singles, Can't Let You Go featuring Lil Mo and Into You featuring Tamia or Ashanti. Including the aforementioned songs, Jackson's series of hit singles extended throughout the 2000s, including Trade It All Part 2 featuring Diddy and Jagged Edge, Breathe, Make Me Better featuring Neo, Baby Don't Go featuring T-Pain, Throw It in the Bag featuring The Dream, and You Be Killin' Him. He is also known for his appearances on several R&B singles, including Superwoman Part 2 by Lil Mo, Shorty Is a 10 by The Dream, Addiction by Ryan Leslie, She Got Her Own by Jamie Foxx, and Say Ah by Trey Songz, among others. In 2004, Jackson signed to Atlantic Records, another subsidiary of Warner Music Group, after leaving Elektra, where he released Real Talk, his first and only album under Atlantic. In 2006, Jackson was let out of his contract with Atlantic and officially signed with Def Jam Recordings, owned by Warner competitor Universal Music Group. Also in 2006, Jackson founded his own record label, Street Family Records. In 2007, he released From Nothing to Something under Def Jam. In 2009, he released his fifth album, Loso's Way. Throughout the years, Jackson has amassed a number of self-released mixtapes, including the several installments of his highly acclaimed There Is No Competition series and the Soul Tape series. He released his sixth album, The Young OG Project, in 2014. So, plenty of things there to talk about. So, initially, the information about Fab's name being an accidental misspelling was not in his bio, but I dug a little bit deeper to find that out because I deemed it to be relevant information, which I found interesting and probably something that most people wouldn't really know off the top of their head unless they really went and looked for it. We also see how Fab got his start there as a senior in high school rapping on DJ Clue's show, which I referenced earlier in my opinions and predictions, talking about Monday Night Mixtape with Dirty T. So that was the DJ Clue shit right there. And although Fab doesn't have any platinum albums, at least not yet, he does have a gold one, and we see here he's had success with a fair amount of singles, both as the lead and featured artist. Other than that, we mostly just see info on his subsequent albums and stuff like that, so let's get into my write-up of Fabulous and see what we got there. Fabulous has been one of my favorite rappers since the DJ Clue days and the Triangle Offense. Even so, he still managed to exceed my expectations. He was without a doubt one of the most consistently amazing rappers when it came to multi-syllabic rhymes, especially in the first half of his career. While there was the occasional times he chose to spell his name rather than rhyme, it was obvious it was not from a lack of skill. He had a lot of dope punchlines, cool wordplay, and sneaky little lines. While he did occasionally take shortcuts, it was rare, and even when it was done, it was usually made up for in other areas on the same bars. He was great at keeping a topic and very good at using different rhyme schemes. While his technicalities were never poor, they did take a minor hit at some points in the second half of his career. Although he did recycle some lines, he was a good storyteller with a lot of impressive double entendres and finished tied as the second greatest lyricist so far. Fab registered 7 solo albums, 1 mixtape, and 1 collaboration album for scoring. Of these 9 albums, 6 were classics and the other 3 were great. That makes 66% of Fab's albums classics and his worst material great, both astounding statistics. Of his 153 qualified songs, 56 were great, another 71 were good, and not a single one was weak. Insanely enough, that makes 83% of Loso's music good or better, which is one of the best percentages in the study so far. Although Fabulous never had a platinum album, he does have a gold one along with 7 top 10 albums, as well as many successful singles over a long period of time. On top of that, he had clear visible influences on artists such as J-Forms, Diddy, Tragedy Gaddafi, Necro, Nature, 50 Cent, Snoop Dogg, Common, Mac-10, Reef the Lost Cause, and a few others. When it came to originality, there was a bit of give and take for Fab. While his image was 50-50 as far as being unique, he did set a few trends. On top of that, he was pretty original with his rhyme style and wordplay, but he did switch up his style halfway through to a more commercially appealing style, and he also took a decent amount from other artists before him, particularly Biggie, Jay-Z, and Nas. So, while I do hear some areas in there that sounded like Fab had the potential to possibly be even better than he already was in, that sounded like a pretty ridiculously amazing write-up there, so let's get into the math for Fab and see how these numbers add up. Lyrics, he gets a 9. Like I spoke about, Fab scores at least in a tie as the second highest lyricist in the study so far, and quite frankly, that was well-earned. Fabulous was almost at that number after like 3 albums, which is absolutely retarded, and then again, you have to understand, when you get into numbers like that, you really have to show something or never ever deviate from that for your entire career, which would have to be relatively lengthy probably, for you to really hit that 9.5, because 10 no one's ever going to get, and 9.5 is the top score. So I really, really need to make sure that there's a separation there before anybody gets to that 9.5, but Fab was up around an 8.5 or a 9 relatively early. Like I said, there were some parts in the second half of his career. Not that he was bad. He was never bad or anything close to being bad. He really was never even average for that matter. It's just that where he may have been a 9.5 for the first 4 albums or so, he was probably closer to a 7.5-8 for a lot of the second half stuff. So he was ridiculous all the way around, but even though he was ridiculous the entire time, I do need to point out that it wasn't constantly a 9. He was definitely more impressive in the first half of his career, but That being said, in the second half of his career, he showed for sure that he didn't lose anything. There were times where he was like, all right, cool, I'm going to snap on this song or whatever, and he just went absolutely crazy. You know, even on his last album, there were times like that. So I certainly wouldn't say that Fab fell off or anything like that. It's just that I think he maybe got a little comfortable, a little lackadaisical, and you know what? If his numbers were doing better from being a little bit more lazy and lackadaisical, then, I mean, you would probably continue to do that, at least for the most part. Again, he was never, you know, below average or even really close to average, but it's like, if you could be a 7.5-8 lyrically and make $5 million a year, or you could be a 9 lyrically and make $500,000 a year, you're probably going to choose to be a 7.5-8 lyrically and make the $5 million a year. Now, again, I got to score what happens, so I'm not trying to make excuses for Fab and be like, oh, it's okay. He just chose to not be a 9.5 for his entire career. That very well may be true, and that does seem like it is the case, but it doesn't matter. I still have to score what he did. But nonetheless, like I said, I mean, he was without a doubt one of the most amazing rappers when it came to multisyllabic rhymes. I mean, in the first half of his career, it was like minimum 8 to 12 syllables rhymed on almost every single bar for like the first half of his career. It was retarded. He had plenty of dope punchlines. He had cool wordplay. He had a lot of sneaky little lines that, you know, might have went over some people's heads, or maybe they just didn't catch or didn't realize what he meant and stuff like that. And listen, like I said, there were times he just spelled his name and it didn't rhyme with anything. You know, he occasionally would take a shortcut. It was rare, but it was done sometimes. But even on a bar where he took a shortcut, there was probably 8 syllables rhyme. There was probably a rhyme scheme on there, and it was probably a dope line. So he would have wound up gaining points from it anyway. It was just super, super, super impressive what Fab was able to do seemingly anytime he wanted to. And like I said, on top of that, There's things that you notice with people where, okay, this guy's rhyming a lot of syllables, but he's not really saying anything. This guy's saying some amazing stuff, and his points are deep and amazing, and that's, you know, raising his lyrical score, but technically speaking, he's not that great. He doesn't rhyme that many syllables or use rhyme schemes and stuff like that. It's usually a lot of give and take. Like me, for example, I'm tremendous at being able to keep a topic. I can rap about anything, and I will not deviate at all. And I'll have some good lines in there. But if you give me free rein to just do some random shit, every bar is probably going to be pretty ridiculous in some way, shape, or form. But if I go on and I'm telling a story or I'm doing something specific, there probably will only be a couple of bars in there that are really dope where it's like, oh, that was a hard line, or there's a lot of syllables rhymed, or there's these rhyme schemes. Because I think it's very important to maintain topics. And, it, you know, if you're making a song that's about something, then make the song be about that. Don't just go off and start saying random shit about how you're such a good rapper when you're making a song about whatever. You know what I'm saying? Something that's not about you being a good rapper. Fab didn't have any of that. Fab could tell stories. Fab could keep a topic. Fab could have dope punchlines. He could have a lot of syllables rhymed, rhyme schemes used, and all of this shit will all be in the same fucking song. So Fab definitely showed that there wasn't much that he couldn't do. Like I said, it wasn't quite enough to put him up to that 9.5, but what an incredible, incredibly impressive lyricist Fab was, no doubt about it. So like I said, he's tied for the second highest score in this study so far lyrically with a 9. Albums, he gets a 7.48 with 6 classics, and there's so much so wild about all of this. So, first of all, you're getting the 6 extra points for the 6 classic albums. Now, that's impressive on its own. When you factor in that Fab only had 9 albums, and 2/3 of them were classics, that's even more ridiculous. On top of that, that album score is not only an average album score of a classic, meaning that when you add all of his albums up and divide by 9, which is the number of albums, it averages out to a score of above a 2. Meaning that on average, Fab's putting out a classic album, period. That's pretty much what it is. Like I said, they didn't all technically score like that, But his worst material was great, and the majority of his material was classic. That came out to a classic album score, which is absolutely ridiculous. There's been very, very, very few people, I'm talking maybe 3 to 5, that have had that, you know, album score that the average reached an average of a classic album. And not only that, but I'm pretty sure that that's the second highest average score in this entire study so far, second to only Eminem. So extremely, extremely impressive stuff there early on from Fab in both the lyrics and the albums category. Songs, he gets a plus 3.7. Talk about this all the time, plus or minus a full point. Starts to become significant. Almost a full 4 points here for Fabulous. And while the song score is not the second highest song score in the study, it's probably in the top 10. That's a really ridiculous song score. So really, really impressive stuff there again from Fab. Impact, he gets a 6, and this is one of those ones where it could probably be raised in the near future. It's close to a 6.5. You kind of got to look at a couple of things here. There are two sides to this coin, but the positive definitely outweighs the negative. So obviously a decent amount of names there for Fab on his artist influence. So that's obviously always a positive when your peers and your other artists are taking things from you, whether it be beats, samples, just repeating lines and stuff like that. It shows people listening to you. It shows people think you're dope. They wouldn't put something that they thought was whack in their song. So, you know, to influence that number of people, and there's some pretty big names on there. So that obviously helps without a doubt. Now, when we talk about, you know, commercial and mainstream success, again, there's two sides to the coin here with Fab. So, you know, no record set, nothing absolutely ridiculous where he was the first to do it or the only one to do it or anything like that. You got to remember, things like that are typically for people that are getting 9s, 8.5s and stuff like that in the impact department. So none of that there for Fab. No platinum album, so, you know, that doesn't help either as far as that's concerned. But again, on the flip side of that, he does have a gold album. Almost all of his albums were relatively successful. 7 of the 9 were top 10 albums, and he had a lot of success with a lot of singles, like we talked about earlier, both as the lead artist and the featured artist. So there was definitely some solid stuff there for Fab as far as, you know, accolades and commercial success and stuff like that. Again, we have to leave a gap. There's no major awards won from Fab, no major records set or broken, no firsts or anything like that, no platinum album, stuff like that, but you know, a lot of other things there to take into consideration. So Fab does get an above average score of 6 in the impact department there. Originality, he gets the same score of a 6. And again, there's a bit of give and take, but the good definitely outweighed the bad. So if you look at Fab's image, it wasn't necessarily unique in the sense that he was wearing shit that nobody else was wearing. You know, mink coats, stuff like that, that, you know, Slick Rick was the first to do that. Fab wore, you know, fitted hats, bandanas, things like that. So I'm not trying to knock Fab, but in general, that's typical hip-hop gear. Now, again, there's a flip side to that particular thing. Fab did set some trends. Now, I'm not saying Fab was the first person to wear a jersey, but Fab definitely helped popularize that. And if you were around at that time, to know how big, you know, having a jersey with a matching fitted and matching kicks or whatever, that shit was huge at that time, and Fab did that. Whether he started wearing that or not, like I said, I'm not saying that Fab was the very first person to ever put a jersey on. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying Fab took something that was relatively unpopular or relatively unknown for the most part and made it an extremely popular trend for a pretty long time. So he's got to get credit for that. On top of that, like I said, he was pretty original with his rhyme style, his wordplay and stuff like that. And we talked about how, you know, some stuff did switch, you know, around halfway through or the second half of his career and stuff like that. We've spoken about it multiple times already in this episode, but Fab still always remained Fab. Like Fab, you know, somebody like Twista did more, I don't want to say of a 180 because Twista still rap fast and stuff like that, but Twista's entire sound and Twista's entire approach seemed to do a 180 at a certain point in his career. I wouldn't say Fab did that. I would say Fab had some minor tweaks that went on that probably allowed him to be a bit more successful, which probably helped his impact score. So let's say rather than getting a 6.5 in originality and a 5.5 in impact, he gets a 6 in both. So it kind of probably evened each other out. You know, you're trading one thing off for the other. It's really not overly important. Neither of those things are, you know, dramatic scores where it's like, oh, you gave him a fucking 3. Like, he's got above average scores in both categories. You could do 1 6.5, 1 5.5, you know, vice versa. But really solid stuff there from Fab across the board. Obviously, the 6 in the impact and the 6 in originality, even though they're above average scores, they're obviously not up to par with the other absolutely ridiculous scores he got in the three categories prior to that. But I mean, to start off with those absolutely retarded scores and then finish with 2 above average scores anyway at the end, I think it's going to bode pretty well for Fab. So you add those 6 numbers up, it's 6 because you're doing lyrics, albums, the 6 points for the 6 classics, songs, impact, and originality. You divide by 5 because it's the number of categories we have. And that gives you a final rating of 7.64, which puts Fabulous in, drum roll please, fourth place of 237 artists done overall. Wow. So, a lot to talk about here. First of all, let me get this out of the way before I say anything else. That is an absolutely amazing finish there from Fabulous. So, hats off to him for that, no doubt about it. Now, he didn't top Jay-Z, so I was wrong about that, at least not yet, and it's not super close, so I don't think he's going to. But he is comfortably inside of our top 5 overall right now, and we're past the halfway point. So this should easily keep Fab inside of our top 10 at least when this is all said and done. And that leads us into me predicting that Fab would beat Jadakiss by at least 25 spots. He's obviously not 25 spots ahead of Jada right now, as Jada's in 17th place, so that would obviously be a mathematical impossibility. But even though my chances of hitting this one are not looking great, I am still alive. If Fabulous stays inside the top 5 and Jada falls to 30 or lower by the time this is done, I'm in business here. But it's not looking great for me currently, I won't lie. Now, Fabulous finished inside the top 10, and that typically means that we'd get a song breakdown, which we kind of will but kind of won't. So, allow me to explain. Now, I don't know if anyone has noticed or not, but both the Jay-Z and Proof episode, as well as the Nas and Shaheem episodes, have both been removed due to copyright claims. I addressed this on the Tale of the Tapes Facebook page, so I'm not going to get, you know, too into it here and go off on a rant, but I will say this, it's absolutely complete and utter bullshit. You have to sign all these licensing agreements on the site prior to uploading any of your shit, and the site told me clear as day that I was allowed to play music on here as long as it was for the purposes of critiquing or commenting on the music, which literally couldn't be any more exact to what we're doing here. So I really can't comprehend what the issue is, because either the music groups have no claim for my music to be taken down, in which case this site that I signed up for, that I had to read all this shit and agree to, they should be in my defense and replying to them and saying it doesn't need to be removed because it's not in, you know, breach of copyright because it's being used to be critiqued or commented on. Now, if that's true, which you told me it was, then my music shouldn't be removed. If that's not true, and this, you know, site lied to me and I'm not allowed to use the music and comment and critique on it, which to my understanding I am, then I should sue the fucking site, because the site told me I was allowed to do it. Now, I didn't get in trouble from these music groups that got it removed, but suppose I did. You told me I was allowed to do this. You actually made me agree that the only way I would do it is in a circumstance like this. And I've done it on many other episodes, and those haven't been removed. So I don't know what will or won't be removed in the future. And I have copies of them saved. It's not like I'm beat on the episodes and they're gone. So if anybody wants to hear the Jay-Z and Proof episodes or the Nas and Shaheem episodes, you know, just feel free to hit up the Tale of the Tapes Facebook page or whatever, and I'll get them to you, no problem. But regardless, though, I say that to say this. I'm not going to play a Fabulous song here and risk this episode being removed because that would piss me the fuck off. So it's unfortunate for Fab, I guess, in a certain sense, because I'm not going to play his song, but it's probably also partially his fault to a certain extent. So that evens each other out. You don't want me to play your song? Fuck it, I won't play your song. But what I will do is I'm going to go to my Fabulous playlist, just as I normally do. I'm going to go to my Fabulous playlist, hit random like I normally do, and then I'm going to read and break down the lyrics of the song. Now, obviously, you can feel free to play the song by yourself and either listen along or read along or whatever the case is. So, although it's a bit annoying, it's really not that big of a deal or a loss at the end of the day, but Fab was just simply too fucking good for us to not at least break down one of his song's lyrics. So, let's go to the list. Let's hit random. And this is Fabulous Keeping It Gangsta Remix featuring Jadakiss, Styles P, Paul Kane, and MOP. Now, again, I've spoken about this before. If these artists did not make the cut in this study, I wouldn't be using this song as a reference. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we're probably only going to get about 8 bars from Fab, so that kind of sucks, but all these people did make the study, so I don't mind breaking down their lyrics. And from what I remember of this song, pretty much everybody slaughters it. And Paul Kane is probably not only one of the greatest rappers that doesn't really exist, but one of my favorite rappers in general. So I definitely have no problem breaking down some Paul Kane lyrics. So I'm going to start off with the first verse here, which is Jadakiss and Styles P. And, you know, obviously, if you guys are listening along, then you'll hear or whatever, but I'm not going to explain. Everybody in the song goes back and forth, so I'm not going to explain who's saying what, but this first verse is from Jadakiss and Styles P, and it says, "How many men could you kill? Let me count all the bullets I got. How many bricks could move? You can say a 20 a block. How many niggas will ride? You could fill a football field. How much money you got? You think I'd signed a football deal?" So that goes on with a question and then the other person answering it. Now, there's nothing too ridiculous in the first 4 bars here. I mean, you got a pretty dope bar there with how many niggas a ride, you could fill a football field, how much money you got, you think I signed a football deal. They're not amazing, but, you know, I would say at least one of those bars is enough to at least take note of. Nothing too ridiculous as far as syllables rhymed or rhyme schemes or anything like that that's going to raise the song score. Then he goes, "My nigga, give me the word. I'ma kill that lame. How many major league niggas play the kidnap game? Have the kid missing for days, listen and pray, and I'ma kill 6 of your niggas 6 different ways." Now, on the latter of those 4 bars, we got missing for days, listen and pray, 6 different ways. So in the first 8 bars here, we definitely can raise the song score a quarter of a point. So we'll put it at a 1.25 so far. Because, like I said, nothing super ridiculous as far as bars is concerned. But, you know, they did have 2 pretty good bars early on. And then you got a lot of syllables rhymed here on these 2 bars, particularly around 12. The exact number is not important because once it goes over 8, you're getting an eighth of a point, and it definitely doesn't hit 16 syllables rhymed in the 2-bar sequence, so it's not going to be a quarter of a point. Then he goes on to say, "And we still got XL rhymes, still gangster, try to run up on the guy, send your legs to your mom. And we still got kilos of coke, rough riders to the death, ride or die, nigga, we know the oath." So, and again, in the latter of those 4 bars, we got kilos of coke, we know the oath. So again, that's another 8 syllables rhymed on the 2 bars there. So they get another eighth of a point. Then he goes on to say, "That's why I'm trying to send this metal through your head, because you got me curious. You probably look better when you're dead." Now, it's not a perfect rhyme there with the 10 syllables, but there's definitely a good amount of syllables rhyme there, and it's a pretty decent line. I'm going to put the metal through your head. You got me curious. You probably look better when you're dead. So, again, between those two, we could give him another eighth of a point. So, we're almost at a 1.75, and we're not even finished with the first verse here. So, obviously off to a good start here for Jada and Styles. Then he says, 9 by the spine, 5th in the host, scumbag, it's them D-block boys, daddy kissing the ghosts. That's one of those where it seems like it's a lot of bars rhymed, but 5th in the host, kissing the ghost. You got the in both of them, so it's really only 6 syllables, but you got 9 by the spine, which is another 2 in the beginning. So right now we're up to a 1.75 with this song because of the syllables rhymed on those last two bars right there. That's another eighth of a point. Coming through like the Matrix in the A6, triple black leather, 6 speed with the gray stick. Give me the safe, I'll spit at your face. Double clip in your mug, then have SP hit it with mace. You could make a case for another eighth of a point there. I don't think it's a perfect enough rhyme to raise it, but it doesn't really matter because these next two bars go, and we just caught burners, and do me, I'll say this, y'all little niggas looking up to me like the walls in Greenhaven. That doesn't really rhyme with anything. I understand that, you know, you could say things in a way where they kind of try to rhyme, but I'm sorry, just there's nothing in there that rhymes with Greenhaven, not even close enough to give them the credit, so that'll even out if you want to give the bars before that some credit for the amount of syllables rhymed on it. So still at a 1.75 here. And he says, keep heating, we'll shank you, rob you and say thank you. Now that's keeping it gangster. So that's the end of the first verse. That was Jadakiss and Styles. Really solid stuff there. I mean, not absolutely ridiculous where they turned the song into a great song just off their verse, but I mean, that's a hell of a start. Fab didn't even come in yet, and this song's at a 1.75. It was also a relatively popular song, so it's probably up near a 2.25 already because this was a single. Even the first one was a single. The original Keeping It Gangsta and then Keeping It Gangsta Remix was also out. So, you know, this song is obviously off to a tremendous start. And then the hook is just the same as the original one. Y'all know who, Keeping It Gangsta, we come through, Keeping It Gangsta. Y'all know how we do, Keeping It Gangsta, my whole crew, Keeping It Gangsta. So, you know, just a repetitive hook there, which is fine. You really can't lose points on your hooks because, you know, you're free to do whatever the fuck you want on your hooks. Your hooks don't even have to rhyme. They could just be one word, whatever the hell you want to do. You could say nothing on your hook for, you know, whatever you want to do. It's obviously your artistic opinion and your artistic vision. The only way that you really will lose points on your hooks is if you show the inability to do anything else. If all of your hooks are just one word repeated. If all of your hooks are just one bar repeated or whatever like that, and you show an inability to do other things, that's when you'll start to lose some credit for your hooks. But certainly not the case with Fabolous. So now we go on to the second verse, which is Fabolous and Paul Kane. And they say, we your favorite gangsters, and Duke better bolt before these slugs sink in his waves like anchors. So this is a dope line. They're basically just saying, you look up to these dudes and think they're rugged. They look up to us and think we're rugged. And then he says, and Duke better bolt before these slugs sink in his waves like anchors. Now, obviously, waves in an ocean, anchors from a boat. You throw an anchor into the water, it sinks to the bottom, it holds your boat down. But there's a hairstyle with waves, and this is why, you know, people wear do-rags and stuff like that. You know, you comb your hair to the side. I don't want to say you comb your hair to the side like a white person that combs his hair to the side, but I'm talking about short, nappy hair that has lines going from left to right rather than back to front. They're called waves. They're referred to as waves. And slugs are bullets from a gun. So he's just saying, I'll put bullets in your head, is essentially what he's saying, but obviously finds a cool way to say it. Duke better bolt before these slugs sink in his waves like anchors. He says, we don't own clean guns. All our skets is dirty. I toss bullets. New York niggas jet like Testaverde. I mean, this is a dope double entendre here. We got a whole bunch of shit going on here. So when he says we don't own clean guns, all our skets is dirty. A sket is basically a term that you would call like a slut or a skeezo or whatever. You know, a girl that just fucks everybody. So another term for fucking people is hitting, right? Like, yo, I hit that raw. You know what I'm saying? So he's saying all our skets is dirty, meaning our guns are things that will hit anybody. They're all dirty, meaning they probably got bodies on them or the serial numbers scratched off or whatever. Then he says, I toss bullets, New York niggas jet like Testa Verde. So he's talking about bullets from a gun, obviously, but a football pass can be referred to as a bullet if it's thrown perfectly straight and hard in a perfect spiral. Now, the New York Jets is an NFL football team, and Testa Verde is a famous quarterback from the New York Jets football team. So a lot of shit going on here. So you got Skets is dirty, Testa Verde, which is eight syllables rhyme than the two bars. So between that and the two bars prior about sinking in your waves like anchors, this song is now up to a 2.5. On top of that, it's a dope line, and it's a double entendre. So we're talking about close to a 2.75 here, and we're not even halfway through the song. Then they go on to say, I don't keep the score on the ratchet, for the dope I'll attach it. Make sure the joint aim point blank so they can't open your casket. So between scope on the ratchet, dope I'll attach it, and open your casket, there's definitely more than 8 syllables rhyme than those two bars. So officially at a 2.75 here. And basically what he's saying about the line is he's saying, I don't keep a scope on the ratchet. I don't need it. I make sure that the gun is right up to your fucking face so I can blow your face and your fucking head off and you can't have an open casket. So again, saying some typical things, but saying them in a really, really dope fucking way. Then they say, my whole crew got Glocks on them in a hurry to shoot like they put shot clocks on them. So in basketball, you have a shot clock and you have to shoot the ball before the 24 seconds is up. So he's basically just saying, everybody in my crew has Glocks on them. And trust me, bro, they're in a hurry to shoot you like they got shot clocks on them. So again, another fucking dope line there by Fab. This song's only almost up to a 3 already. All that gossip you blast, better see if they possibly has a V12 ambulance that gets you to a hospital fast. You're talking about another 12 syllables rhyme there on the two bars. And I mean, the line is dope. He's saying all that gossip you blast, you better see if they possibly has a V12 ambulance that gets you to a hospital fast. Because I'm going to fuck your shit up. And you're going to need to get there fast. A V12 is a certain kind of engine that's very powerful and very fast. So he's saying, I'm going to fuck you up so bad, bro. You better hope they have an ambulance with a V12. Because if not, you're going to be dead on arrival. And you're not even going to make it to the hospital. Then he says, they let Kane out the cage in the shackles. I ain't call a pager to track you. I'm loading up gauges to whack you. So again, cages and shackles, pager to track you, gauges to whack you. There's more than 8 syllables rhyme there again on the two bars. I don't think it's anything super ridiculous as far as what he's saying, but super dope stuff there. Technically, again, we've been riding together. And us back and forth, it's like putting Saddam Hussein and Bin Laden together. Another pretty dope bar there. I'm sure everybody understands who Saddam Hussein and Bin Laden are. Two of the biggest threats to the country of America as far as what's portrayed on the TV, at least. So I understand what he's getting at there. Then he says, soon as you get a crumb, they want to bury you. That's why I travel with a semi like Eddie and come into America. Again, you got a nice rhyme scheme there. You got, soon as you get a crumb, they want to bury you. A, that's why I travel with a semi. B, like Eddie. B, and come into America. Coming to America was a movie with Eddie Murphy, in case you don't know what he's referencing there. Then he says, silences. It sounds like it's humming when I'm airing you. Won't know you hit till your body numbing in that area. Again, it's not super ridiculous what he's saying. Silences, it sounds like it's humming when I'm airing you. You know, just explanation stuff there. Kind of trying to paint a vivid picture. Silences on the gun. Doesn't sound like boom, 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 boom. It just sounds like a low vibration or whatever the case is. And, you know, humming when I'm airing, you're numbing in that area. You know, a lot of syllables rhyme there again, or you can use humming and numbing as, you know, an A-B-A-B rhyme scheme, whatever way you look at it. Dope stuff there again. I'm not even counting anymore as far as the song score is concerned, because this is without a doubt already a 3. If you didn't give it the extra half a point for being a popular song, it's fine. It's probably already at a 3 anyway. So, and if it's not, I can pretty much guarantee that it will be by the end of the song. But it's very close nonetheless. But this was a popular song, so I can pretty much guarantee you this song was scored as a 3. Then they go on to say, the kids don't want to see the toast to mom and daddy, plus we'd rather be roasting trauma fatties in a toasted armored caddy. I don't think I really need to tell anybody there's a ridiculous amount of syllables rhymed on those two bars. And we come through with chains glistening and things spitting. Hollow shots that'll leave your brain missing. Another 9 syllables rhymed on the two bars there. You can keep going up and up and up as far as you want. Obviously, 3 is the highest score that a song can get. But just to make a point, I mean, this is probably closer to a 4 or 5 at the end of the day. And then they finish off the verse by saying, ghetto FAB and Paul K, nigga, we getting heaps of complaints for keeping it gangster. So those kind of offset each other because, you know, the Paul Kane on the first bar and keeping it gangsta doesn't really rhyme. But again, heaps of complaints for keeping it gangsta. A lot of syllables rhyme there. So those could offset each other. Like I said, nonetheless, doesn't matter. This song is a 3 no matter what, without a doubt. You got the hook again that comes in there. And then verse 3 is Billy Dan's. He, I believe, goes like 8 to 12 bars, and then there's no hook, and Little Fame comes in after that and does his 8 to 12 bars. Those are the two members in MOP. So, Billy Dan's first here, he says, hey yo, we represent them down-ass niggas. MOP, rip rounds at you clown-ass niggas. BK, nigga, get up off snooze. Don't make me put your gangsta on the 6 o'clock news. So, he's basically just saying, listen, bro. You're doing your thing, whatever, you know, I don't see you, I don't know you. Why don't you just fucking chill out before you make shit so public that I have to come fucking kill you? And then the way that you made the news is not by you doing something super gangster, but because somebody took you to fuck out for acting like that. So, nothing too ridiculous, but pretty dope stuff there. Then he says, you ride in a what? Don't get it fucked up or twisted, because you'll get it twisted and fucked up. Now, it seems like it's fucked up and fucked up, and those don't really rhyme, that's just a repeat, but he does start the first bar by saying, you ride in a what? So we can end the first bar there. That's bar 1, you ride in a what? And then bar 2 is, don't get it fucked up or twisted, because you'll get it twisted and fucked up. So, what and up, that's fine, they don't lose anything there, he says, and die in that truck. Be cautious when you're walking through. Be careful who you're talking to. Come straight home. It's the livest motherfuckers of the century. You niggas is killing me. You gotta be kidding me. Ain't nobody taking it and making it extra like us, showing their ass on the record and bless it like us. Now, it's kind of a shortcut because he says extra like us and then bless it like us. Extra and bless it don't really rhyme. Record and bless it rhyme, but those are both at the end of the bars there. So it normally would lose an 1/8 of a point, but he says taking it and making it and then extra like us, and then he has record and bless it. So there is 8 syllables rhyme there on the two bars. So those kind of offset each other and they don't lose or gain any points there. Then he says, now about them weak flows, keep those, we eat those. As far as heat goes, we keep those, the street knows. Now, altogether, some of those words are repeated. Like he says, keep those twice. He says, eat those, which is really only eat because those is repeated 3 times. So there is a lot of words repeated in there, but if you count the ones that are different, there are still 9 syllables rhymed on those two bars. So that would be another 1/8 of a point on the song. Again, it's already over a 3, but I'm just trying to point out what everybody did on the song. Then he says, the MOP is what's up. We in the cut. Brownsville is heating it up. And that's the end of that verse. And even though they both end with up right there, it's P is what's up, heating it up. So that's okay that, you know, he manages to make a rhyme out of there enough that I'm not going to take any credit away. And then that verse is split between Billy Dan's and Little Fame. So the first half was Billy Dan's, and then Little Fame, the other member of MOP, comes in now and he says, "Fuck your ego. I still spit lines at your bitch. Play CeeLo and spit four fives at your six." So this is a decent line. Now, the two bars don't really have anything to do with each other, but the 4-5 at your 6 is pretty dope. So CeeLo is a dice game, a popular dice game in the hood. I used to love CeeLo, but I have bad luck, so I'm not a giant fan of playing games that involve too much luck anymore because it's pretty much an automatic loss, and who the fuck plays CeeLo when you're not playing for money? So it's like, do I really even want to bother, like, just kind of handing over my money to play the game? But I do love CeeLo. I definitely do love that game. And 4-5-6 is the best thing that you could roll in CeeLo. If you roll a 4-5-6, you automatically win the game. A 4-5 is also a gun, a handgun. So he's saying play CeeLo and spit 4-5s at your 6. A 6 is a certain cars, they come in certain models and certain series and stuff like that. And, you know, you have like an S-Class or you have a 4.5 or a 5.0 and things like that. So he's basically just referring to a nice car by saying you're six. So cool little wordplay there. You could probably give him some credit for that, maybe another eighth of a point. And then he says, "You don't really want to lose your life, so I'm going to smack flames out you. Pick your money up and roof your dice." So he's basically just saying that, I understand you're pissed off and shit. I get it. But you don't want to die. You don't want to die and you're not ready to die. So instead of killing you, instead of you causing a giant altercation and me killing you, I'm going to just fucking smack you and take your money and roll out. And, you know, what are you going to do about it? On top of that, we have an ABAB rhyme scheme on the two bars as well, because he says, "Fuck your ego, A. I still spit lines at your bitch, B. Play CeeLo, A, and spit 4-5s at your 6, B." So, again, like I said, good stuff there on the first two bars coming in for Little Fame, and that's probably another quarter of a point in itself right there. "Yo, you don't know where we from, soldier. Come, soldier, dump. Soldier, you'll be found on your whip slumped over." Now, even though he repeats soldier three times there, if you pay attention, from soldier and what he ends with, slumped over, is six syllables. Then you have come and dump that rhyme in between it. So it is eight syllables rhymed. So again, probably another eighth of a point there. This song's got to be at least at a four at this point. "With your gangsta ass, dead and you gone, iced out, chain out, with your brains out, head on your horn." That's a pretty dope line there. So it's not a perfect rhyme as far as the syllables, with dead and you gone, head on your horn, but it is very close. And again, we got chain out, brains out. So not only is there eight syllables rhyme, but it's a rhyme scheme there. So you could add another quarter of a point for those two bars. Then he says, "You know who be keeping it gangsta with a truck full of goons that's fakesta, and the Brownsville niggas from the past that run up, put a hammer to your gut and tell you drop it in the bag. You gangsta, huh? Whatever. Cause for real, if I ever catch your ass slipping, I'ma pop a collar. Whoa, Mac, and when your bitch holler." And then it goes into the chorus, "Y'all know who." So, listen, when you're reading lyrics off of a paper, it's never going to seem as good as when you listen to it, because things are said in a certain way, in a certain flow, or, you know, maybe they're in succession and this bar leads into this bar. You know, bar three or bar two or bar one make bar four better because of what he's talking about and things like that. So, again, I'm not trying to say that this is any substitute for what we typically do. I really wish we could just still do it the other way, because this is quite ridiculous. But if you listen along, you know, to the song while we're doing this, it shouldn't really be much of an issue. So, you know, I think that anytime we do this, you should go and play the song, if for no other reason than just to hear the song, especially if you've never heard it before. But, I mean, those are the lyrics. That's, you know, those are the lyrics that are written down. So whether they're being read perfectly or not, or, you know, it's painting a perfect picture or not, it really isn't important, to be quite honest. I mean, the whole point of us doing it is to showcase the top lyricists and to kind of explain to you how I'm getting to the song scores that I'm getting to. This was clear on both accounts. I mean, we only probably got about 8 bars from Fabulous, and he absolutely snapped out on all 8 of them. So I'm sure you could see there at least what Fab was like, and he was like that extremely consistently, to say the least. So obviously an incredible lyricist there. Everybody pretty much went fucking bananas on this song. I mean, even the people that were just good and weren't really absolutely ridiculous, I mean, they still did their thing. They still raised the song score. This was a 3 without a question. This was probably closer to a 4 or a 4 or a 5, as I alluded to earlier. I didn't really keep adding perfectly after the 3 count, so I couldn't really tell you, nor does it really matter, but I just wanted to show you guys how good Fabulous was lyrically, or at least give you guys a very small glimpse of what he was capable of, and also, you know, show you that process that we go through to get the song scores that we get, and I feel like both of those things were definitely accomplished by doing that. I do also like to give the dude that finished that high a little bit of shine and play their songs, but apparently these people don't want me playing their songs, so fuck them, I won't play their songs. I hate to direct that at Fab, because Fab himself didn't particularly do anything to me, and maybe he wouldn't even have his song or whatever removed, but I'm just, you know, generally speaking at these people in this industry that do this stuff, and I understand a lot of times it's the label and not necessarily the artist, but it's just ridiculous. I mean, you know, the Jay-Z song and the Nas song that were played on those episodes, I purchased both of them back in the day. Like, I had those actual, you know, albums that I went to a store and purchased and shit like that. Like, today, nobody really has any songs. Like, all you're doing is paying for a subscription to a streaming service, and that streaming service is allowing you to listen to the songs. So you're paying the streaming service, and then obviously the artists are getting a certain percentage of that, I understand. But it's different than going to a store and actually purchasing the music. Now, that's not to say that I think I own the fucking music when I go buy the album in the store and that I could do whatever I want with that album. That's not what I'm saying. You're not allowed to resell. You're not allowed to use it for profit. Like, I can't just sample it and then sell songs with the samples on it and not pay it to the original person and stuff like that. I get all that. But there are different forms of copyright and there are different exceptions to copyrights. And I forget exactly what it's called. It's something like fair use or common use or something, where you're allowed to play the songs in certain scenarios. And again, like I said, from what I was told by this website, to my understanding, and even when I contacted them after they were removed by support, even though I was speaking to a person, it was very similar to speaking to a robot, because they kept just like repeating the same things. And I kept saying, I understand what you're saying, but you told me, and I copied and pasted where it said it, in the email that you removed my fucking song, you told me that it was allowed to be used for these purposes. So you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. And instead of just saying to me, oh, you're right, we fucked up, re-upload the episodes and we won't remove them, you just keep repeating the same dumb shit to me that is not answering the question that I'm asking you. Why did you guys tell me that I was allowed to use these songs as long as I was critiquing and commenting on the music? So, again, I don't want to go off on a huge tangent about it, but the whole thing is just ridiculous. I wish we could have played the Fabulous song here today, but hopefully you played it along with us. And if you did, that was Fabulous, Keeping It Gangsta Remix, featuring Jadakiss, Styles P, Paul Kane, and M.O.P. And that song is actually a bonus track on Fab's second studio album, Real Talk, which came out in March of 2003. Like I said earlier, that's one of my top 25 favorite hip-hop albums of all time, so I'll never mind hearing anything from that album. So, very solid stuff there, obviously. So, I gotta give a major shout-out to Fab, not only for finishing inside of our top 5 overall here today, but for being one of my personal favorite rappers of all time, and putting out so many classics, including Real Talk, which is one of my all-time personal favorites that we just caught a glimpse of. So, super, super impressive stuff here today from Fab across the board. And with that out of the way, we're officially done covering Fabulous, which means We can now move on to Immortal Technique, who, like I stated earlier, had his debut album out in 2001. His birth name is Philippe André Coronel, born February 19, 1978 in Lima, Peru. His origins listed as Harlem, New York, United States. His genres are listed as hip-hop, East Coast hip-hop, underground hip-hop, political hip-hop, and hardcore hip-hop. And his years active are listed as 2000 to present. So Immortal Technique and Fabolous are apparently the exact same age, which is kind of crazy being covered here in the same episode, even though they have absolutely nothing to do with each other whatsoever. I didn't ever realize that Immortal Technique was from Peru, although like I stated in the intro of the episode, I really didn't know too much about Immortal Technique in general, so I guess that's not overly surprising, but I mean something like that, like that's kind of, you know, you weren't even born in America. I would have thought just from hearing about this guy that maybe I would have heard about that, but I definitely didn't know that. Not really much else there out of the ordinary that I feel like needs to be talked about or anything like that. So let's check out some additional background info here on Immortal Technique. Philippe André Coronel, born February 19th, 1978, better known by his stage name Immortal Technique, is an American rapper. Most of his lyrics focus on controversial issues in global politics from a radical left-wing perspective. Immortal Technique seeks to retain control over his production and has stated in his music that record companies, not artists themselves, profit the most from mass production and marketing of music. He claimed in an interview to have sold close to a combined total of 200,000 copies of his first three official releases. So, as I kind of expected, not too much there for Immortal Technique, and I don't really think there's anything in particular that we need to discuss, so let's just go right into my breakdown of Immortal Technique. While I knew some friends pretty fond of Immortal Technique, I had only personally ever heard one song of his prior to this study. Lyrically, he was all over the place early on with run-on bars and not rhyming sometimes, but still managing to do some above-average things. Although he did have a great vocabulary and said some very important things, sometimes he unnecessarily used a lot of big words for no reason just to rhyme words. However, he continuously seemed to get gradually better, and just before halfway through his catalog, the good was steadily starting to outweigh the bad. He did lose his flow a bit at times, but he also had some pretty good, strong, meaningful lines. On top of that, he was pretty good at keeping a topic for the most part, and definitely showed the ability to tell good stories with crazy twists and endings that could make some deep points, leaving him above average lyrically overall. While he only put out three albums, he was extremely consistent with all of them being great albums. Of his only 39 registered songs, 6 were great, another 18 were good, and 2 were weak. Even with the 2 weak songs, that makes over 60% of Immortal Technique's music good or better. Couple that with every album being great, and you're looking at some solid stats there. Between the small catalog, lack of accolades, and no artist influence thus far in the study, impact on the hip-hop game was one area that really hurt him. There was a lot of give and take when it came to the originality of Immortal Technique. While he certainly had a different sound and message than that of the mainstream, it wasn't overly unique from that of the underground, and he was a bit conflicting with his message at times. Another thing that struck me as a bit odd was how many times he criticized commercial rappers for being lame and rocking over the same beats, and then went and used some of the same beats of artists he was seemingly mocking for doing this. So that sounds like a bit of give and take there for Immortal Technique, and a dude that sounds like he's pretty good, but didn't have a huge catalog or impact. So I'm curious, let's check out the numbers here for Immortal Technique and see what we got. Lyrics, he gets a 6, and you know, the first half of his first album, it was just so many things, and it's kind of like exactly what I expected, like I talked about in the intro of the episode where I was talking about how you have to really pay close attention. I mean, you know, in the first 6 songs or so, he had so many things going on. He had run-on bars, there were times he didn't rhyme. He was doing some things that were pretty dope. He had a great vocabulary. He said some very important things. And you know, all this stuff was going on at once, like rapid fire. And then as he neared the end of his first album, he started to become more consistent and less sporadic. So it's not that none of the other things were going on anymore, but by the time I got halfway through his second album, the good was steadily outweighing the bad to the point where I knew he was climbing lyrically and there probably wasn't going to be any halts or going backwards at that point. It seemed to be going in the right direction. Like I said, there were times that he had, you know, a little bit of trouble with, you know, times where he lost his flow. But like I said, he had good, strong, meaningful lines. He was pretty good at keeping a topic. He definitely showed the ability to tell good stories and crazy stories at that. Stories that not only paint a picture, but, you know, really leave an imprint on your mind as far as the point that they were getting across to you. So definitely an above average lyricist there in Immortal Technique. So he gets a 6 lyrically overall. Albums, he gets a 5.30 with 0 classics. And although he doesn't officially get any extra points for any classic albums, I mean, 100% of your albums being great is extremely impressive. I mean, I know he only had the 3 albums, but still, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean that they okay, well, if you only come out with 3 albums, they're obviously going to be great. I mean, you can come out with 3 albums and they could all suck. You know what I'm saying? So to have 100% of your albums be great albums is obviously very impressive. And, you know, obviously if all of his albums were great albums, that overall average album score is a great album score. So great stuff there in the albums department by Immortal Technique. Songs, he gets a +1, exactly a full point there. Again, I spoke about it before, I speak about it when I cover every artist. Plus or minus a full point starts to become significant on your final rating there. So he does get plus a full point there. Like I said, 39 songs. He had 6 great songs, but he did have 2 weaker songs. So you have to take the percentage of great songs and then minus the percentage of weak songs, which obviously came out to be a difference of a +4. And with 39 songs, that was about 10% of his material. So you move the decimal place one spot over and it gives you a +1. Impact, he gets a 3.5. And like I spoke about, there was a lot of things to keep in mind here. I mean, when you talk about commercial success and stuff like that, there was really nothing for Immortal Technique. Now, I know in his write-up, it said that his albums combined for a total of 200,000 in sales. Now, first of all, we don't really know how accurate. It does say that he's saying that. So we don't really know how accurate that is. The likelihood of that being completely accurate is not likely. It's probably closer to 150 if I had to guess, which would be 50,000 for each album, which that's cool. I mean, I'm not trying to knock them. I never sold 50,000 copies of any of my albums. So again, I don't want you guys to take what I'm saying the wrong way, but we have to compare this to other people that we have covered and other people that we're going to cover. Selling 50,000 copies on each one of your albums is not a lot, but it is still, you still did that. You understand, when we grade me and we give me an impact score, I'm not going to get credit for selling 50,000 copies of my album. Comparatively to fucking, you know, 10 million albums like Tupac or something like that, who sold 10 million copies of one fucking album. Listen, 150,000, even give him the 200,000, it still obviously pales in comparison. But again, pin that 200,000 against my 1,000 that I put out for Heaven and Hell and 718 and shit like that. You know what I mean? It's fucking 50 times the amount. Or if you're looking at totals, you know, whatever it is, 75 times the amount. So just understand when I say these things, the scale that we're putting this stuff on, that's definitely on the lower end of the spectrum. And again, we don't know how completely true that is. You know, you mix that with the fact that he has no names on his list of artists influenced, at least not up to this point in the study, not yet. I don't think that that's going to change, but obviously it could. I still have over 200 people to go through. So it's possible that somebody, you know, takes something from him, sample something from him, whatever. But up to this point, I haven't seen any of that. Again, you also have to keep in mind that there's not even really a lot of material here. So not only was he not commercially successful, which I don't know if he ever tried to be, but there's no classic albums. There's only 3 albums in total, and this man's really only put out like 39 songs. So when you talk about impact on hip hop, to be quite honest with you, the fact that he sold, you know, again, let's just give it to him, 200,000 copies of, you know, combined of his first three albums, which comes out to almost 70,000 copies each album. That's really the only thing that's like got him up there. You know what I mean? Because if it wasn't for that, there really wouldn't be much else to give him credit for. And that would probably be, you know, a three or lower at best. So a well below average score of 3.5 in the impact department there for Immortal Technique. And originality, he gets a 6. So like I said, you have to keep everything in mind again. Sure, his sound was totally different from that of the radio, right? And I spoke about him talking about, oh, these commercial rappers are lame, all rocking over the same beats and shit like that. And then he would like sample some of the same shit. So it's give and take. Yes, he was different than the radio in that sense that even when he sampled the same stuff, it had a different sound to it. But why sample the same stuff if you're going to criticize somebody else for like rocking over the same samples or the same type of beats? Like, just stay away from that and do some totally original, unique, different shit. You know what I mean? Like, if that's what your MO is going to be, then be that. Don't fucking sample the same thing that Jay-Z sampled or whatever. It's like, you know, you can't really get more commercially successful than that. So it was a bit odd doing that. But again, even though he differed a lot from the mainstream, he didn't really differ a lot from the underground. I mean, there's plenty of underground artists with radical left-wing political views that they talk about in their music and shit like that. Few of them have made it to the mainstream, like Public Enemy and stuff like that. But again, you just have to keep everything in consideration where, yeah, he's different from the norm. But he is the norm of the people that are not the norm. You know what I'm saying? If there's this many people that are being thrown in your face, yeah, he's different than them, but he's very similar to all the other people that are not thrown in your face, is the point that I'm trying to make. Now, that's not to say that he was taking a massive amount from people or he was copying the underground or anything like that. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just trying to say that it wasn't overly unique from a lot of those other people. But again, I thought everything taken into consideration, the guy was more original than he was typical. So he got an above average score of a 6 in the originality department there. So you add those 5 numbers up and you divide by 5. And that gives you a final rating of 4.36, which leaves Immortal Technique in 127th place of 237 artists done overall. So, while that's not a great finish for Immortal Technique, it's certainly not a bad one either. And not for nothing, but I've been on fire with my predictions lately as I just nailed another one. You know, missing a guess on someone that I've heard one or two songs at the most by just 2 spots there. And listen, man, with an impact score that low, finishing right around the midway point is quite the accomplishment, so definite shout-outs to Immortal Technique no matter what. I'm not trying to take anything away from the guy and, you know, by saying it's not a great finish. I just mean it's not a top 10 or anything, but with an impact score of a 3.5, finishing around that halfway point like that, you have to be good to do that. You understand what I'm saying? And listen, an above-average lyric score, a great album score, he gets plus a full point in the songs thing, and above average in originality. So again, aside from impact, I mean, this guy's a solid artist, no doubt about it. We just have to take everything into consideration. And when you have a guy like that, that only put out 3 albums, 39 songs, and is relatively unknown to a certain extent. I don't want to say he's unknown. He's known in the underground, and that's another thing that held him up at a 3.5. But not to your, you know, casual hip-hop fan or your radio listener or a mainstream hip-hop person and things like that. So solid stuff there. Shout out to Immortal Technique, no question. Now, we're not going to run our lists off today, but in 2 weeks we will be going over our lists, and I've recently re-gone over a couple of artists that were already done, and I'm telling you, we definitely have some major and probably surprising changes to almost all of our lists. I literally think all of them have been changed. So that should be exciting. Make sure you check out episode 18 with Bubba Sparks and T.I. to hear the newest updated versions of all of our lists read off. If you're interested in seeing any of those lists in writing, you can give the Facebook website a visit at www.facebook.com/Tale of the Tapes Podcast. And if you're interested, give the page a like to follow along. In doing so, you could see, you know, the lists and the schedules in writing up on the site. You can give predictions, answer questions, give your opinions on things, suggestions, whatever, you know, things to come, yada, yada. You can also give the host website a visit at www.anchor.fm/Tale of the Tapes. Both of those links are spelled completely normally. On the host website, you'll see a support button, and it would be greatly appreciated if anyone could hit that for me. So thank you in advance to anyone who does that. With that being said, that's going to wrap up today's episode. And although we didn't get to necessarily play the actual song out loud here today, hopefully you either listened along or you go and check the song out yourself. But nonetheless, man, some incredible stuff here and a pretty impressive episode altogether, I'd say, by both artists. I understand that Immortal Technique's final finish wasn't anywhere near fabulous, and, you know, generally speaking, his numbers weren't, you know, up to par with them either, but I would say impressive stuff here from both guys, without a doubt. Next week on Tale of the Tapes, we'll be covering Reef the Lost Cause and Idea. Tale of the Tapes. Peace.
Tale of the Tapes. Might as well.